on this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome to another episode of Therapy Bites. Today we are going to talk about two important aspects of self-care, and that is our thoughts and our emotions. Want to know the connection between the two? Stick around.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Therapy Bites. So today we are going to be talking about the interplay between thoughts and emotions and also how that relates to self-care. We've talked about self-care before, I believe in a clubhouse room, but we haven't really talked about it a whole lot in our podcast. So we thought we'd hit two really important aspects of it, which is thoughts and emotions.
Well, one thing that sticks out is we still as a profession demonize emotions by over-pathologizing them. And we talk about things such as a anxiety disorder, like the anxiety is the disorder, a mood disorder, as if moods are the disordered part of human life. But don't we all have moods? And don't we all have anxiety? After all, anxiety is what gets you up from a seated position to the bathroom instead of just going where you sit. I mean, the pressure on your bladder produces a certain amount of alert, a little bit of anxiety, and hopefully that gets you up into the toilet. Otherwise, we got a mess on our hands. But We focus on emotions, I think, because we notice emotions first, and they cause suffering. But then again, think about this, a bit of a trick question. What would life be like if there were zero possibility of ever having any suffering with your emotions? All emotions were simply comfortable emotions, and how would that play out in your life? What ideas do you have?
I think that's a fairy tale, really, in real life. Because when you think about it, when I first moved to Arkansas from the desert or from Southern California, I just was amazed by the beauty of the trees and the birds and the water and just so many things. And I've lived here over 30 years now, and it's still beautiful, but it's not I don't appreciate it as much as I did when I first came out here or when I would visit. And I think it's the same with emotions. If everything was comfortable and perfect and this and that, I don't think we'd appreciate it.
My question earlier about what would life be like, gosh, would anybody ever go to work? I mean, if there was no discomfort, why would you punch that time clock? Why'd you even show up to work? If there was no discomfort in not feeding your children dinner, why would you feed your children dinner? And we kind of have seen a seismic shift in our own profession in the direction of comfort at all cost and lack of responsibility for our own thinking at all costs. And Debbie read to me earlier today in the art lab something that really kind of took me in at first. Because I thought, cool, I completely agree with that. And then she was playing Paul Harvey and the rest of the story, and I was shocked. What was it that the post said?
It starts out with, although we can always choose what happens to us, or can't choose, sorry, although we can't always choose what happens to us, we can always choose how to respond.
And, I love that. Yay. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's
like,
awesome.
We can't choose what happens to us, but like Viktor Frankl said, everything can be taken from us, but the last and greatest of all things, and that is the power to choose, our own way, our own response. And this thing with responsibility and that I still love, responsibility is your ability to respond. And the folks that put out this post, and I think they need to change their name, Therapist at Rocks. Therapist at Rocks, this does not rock. This should be buried under the rocks. I guess you'll kick Viktor Frankl out of your group because responsibility is the ability to respond.
It is.
And what's the rest of it say?
And that's where it took a sharp turn. In big letters underneath that, it says, this statement is false.
Oh, my gosh. We don't have the ability to respond. We're leaves on the wind of life. try that out in a court, by the way. Yeah, that is your defense to the judge. You're going to prison, I guarantee it. Guilty, guilty, guilty.
It's just so disempowering, too, because it's basically saying, oh, no, don't even think about that. You don't have any control over what you do. And it's like, well, but yes, I do. And especially the more I tell myself I don't have any control, I'm going to believe it. And I'm going to think that I am just using some more catastrophizing terms. I am just chained to this style of living for the rest of my life. And, you know, if I would have thought that, I would have never gotten to the point where I am now, where I am a therapist. I would have probably just stayed in my house and I wouldn't have ever left. Because there was a point in, you know, my healing process that I didn't want to leave my house. And what got me to leave my house was graded exposure therapy of leaving my house on purpose, making it a point, no matter how I felt, to do it, because I knew it was going to be better for me in the long run.
And you can apply this to so many things. You can apply it to working out in the gym. No, you're not going to start out with a really, really heavy weights. But if you don't start somewhere, applying some weight, it's called resistance training, some resistance to your time in the gym, then you'll never get stronger. How do you think somebody learns, if they're an Olympic athlete, to jump a longer distance or a higher bar? They start freaking jumping. They are applying a challenge to themselves. And I don't know. I think, as I said, we've taken a kind of there's been a seismic shift away from taking responsibility for the trajectory of your life. But I do want to say it's great marketing. Because if you can do that, and I'm that therapist, you know, that quote trauma-informed therapist, that I would say this is trauma misinformed because this is disabling, then goodness, I'll have you forever. As a patient, I'll have you forever. I mean, we should just sign a contract for life because you will become more and more and more disabled and buried under those cognitive distortions. But what does the rest of the post say there, Debbie?
Rest of the post says, being trauma-informed does not mean that all existing and long-standing theories of human behavior are accurate.
Well, that's problematic because there's a heck of a lot of research, and you can, don't take my word for it, you can Google it. There are studies that are focused on what this post is talking about, a handful. I don't know, it's in the low hundreds to maybe thousands, if I'm not pushing that too far. The study is on the other side of the equation, tens and tens and tens of thousands. I mean, this is challenging over half a century of work, and the smartest theorist who ever lived, Albert Ellis, they would throw him out. Aaron Beck, gone. Viktor Frankl, gone, because evidently in this mindset, we have no ability to respond to events, situations, circumstances. And please don't try that with your children. It won't work out well. They'll just grow up to be, you know, axe murderers or something. No, it's life is all about responsibility.
The Therapy Bites podcast is HIPAA compliant. No identifying patient information will be disclosed by Therapy Bites podcast hosts or Therapy Bites podcast guests without permission from patients or guardians. All personal stories are de-identified in order to comply with HIPAA, the NASW Code of Ethics, and the Ethical Principles of Psychologists and Code of Conduct. Fresh from the therapy couch and from the deep dark recesses, stories may involve exploding preconceived notions and topics uncomfortable to underthinkers and small farm animals. Audience discretion and duct taping your head for safety is advised. Concrete-headed Kool-Aid drinking humans assume all risks associated with any possibility of choking to death on the accurate, realistic thoughts presented in the art lab. This is natural selection, and Therapy Bites podcast management and hosts are not responsible.
I often get the question about sleep. I can't sleep. I try to go to sleep. I can't initiate sleep. I go to sleep and I don't stay asleep. And then I start asking questions about what we call sleep hygiene. What is your sleep regimen like?
What time do you go to bed? How do you prepare yourself for bed? What do you do while you're in bed? And one of the greatest offenders I find is bathing the brain in blue light. Here's a good way to think of it. Look outside during the daytime and tell me what color the sky is. Oh, wow, it may be blue, you might see, if it's a nice day. Well, guess what color of light comes from your phones? Blue light. Now, the brain is heavily associated with being awake when the sky is blue. Why would you bathe your brain in the light that triggers your brain to be awake when you're trying to go to sleep? Do your brain a favor. Be brain friendly when it comes to sleep. Put up these devices that we call smartphones because they actually will do the opposite to you. Your brain during testing can actually drop a couple of IQ points just because of lack of sleep hygiene. Put away the blue light, it's only for the blue sky, and get a better night's sleep. Put your phone across the room, put it in a drawer, make it hard to get to. Way back before there were phones, people slept just fine without them. You can train your brain to sleep just fine without them too. Turn off the TV screens, turn off the laptops, turn off the smart pads. The only thing that sleep is for, well, there's really two things, but we'll talk about one of them. We'll leave one of them a secret, is sleep. Stop trying to do homework in bed, watch your favorite Netflix shows in bed, watch the next episode of your favorite TV show, and just program your brain to associate bed with sleep, and you'll find yourself counting sheep in no time. Now back to today's episode.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball Team.
One of my favorite quotes, Teddy Roosevelt, the buck stops here. In your life, the buck... It's a buck knife, by the way. It means that you're dealing the cards. Stops with you. I'm tapping my forehead, engineer our thoughts. And then our thoughts, well, make no mistake about it. Those thoughts engineer our lives. And if you're telling yourself that you lack the ability to decide how to respond to a situation because of a trauma, and I'm sorry that happened to you. I've had trauma happen to me. Debbie's had trauma happen to her. Sarah's had trauma happen to her. And they tried what this post is preaching, and it failed. And that's why they tried a new way. But don't take our word for it. You can try this approach for years or decades, and then when it fails, well, try it a different way. Try embracing, try living, try breathing, try seeing that your greatest ability is your responsibility. And Dave is going to read the rest of the post.
So the rest of it says, fight, flight, and freeze behaviors are unconsciously reflexive. We need to stop perpetuating the myth that we are always in conscious control of our actions. It hurts and shames children and adults.
Okay, let me tackle the part before, let me go ahead and talk about the shaming children and adults. Shame is not created from the outside in. You can't shame me unless I agree to it. You may say, hey, I don't like the size and shape of your nose. Well, there's no shame there unless I decide to participate in that. And I don't. I could do something about my nose, but I'm going to leave it be. You may not like the color of my shirt. You might not like the gait that I walk. There may be many things that you don't, but there's a common thing out there about, you know, it's weird. We say we have no ability to respond, but others have the ability to create shame in us. I mean, how oxymoronic is that? I don't have the ability to respond, but you have the ability to fiddle faddle control my neurons and create shame inside the vault of my skull. No, don't believe that Kool-Aid drinking psycho malarkey. That is disabling. But the other part is they have a point. And read the conscious control part again.
Yeah. Fight, flight, and freeze behaviors are unconsciously reflective.
Yes. Yes. But so is handedness. You don't consciously think, I'm going to pick up the coffee cup, move it a foot and a half to my big mouth, and drink coffee. You don't consciously think about that. But I have a question. Could I decide to drink it with my left hand? Yes, I could. Without conscious intention, yes, I will fall into the same patterns that I designed a week ago, a month ago, a year ago, 10 years ago. We don't design habitual behavior in the moment. We design habitual behavior in all the moments leading up to the moment. And even right now, if you're telling yourself, I have no ability to respond differently, then you have designed your future without even knowing it. So I think the mistake that we make in therapy is we try to remove it from real life. And we make the mistake as clinicians of not making it clear to those we serve that the skills you're going to develop in therapy really work in the brain just like any other skill you want to adopt or master. Therefore, treating trauma and developing different life patterns, well, are you able to just do that? No. Are you able to just bounce back and confront something that reminds you of the trauma, and then you don't think catastrophic thoughts, and since you're not thinking catastrophic thoughts, you don't experience anxiety or panic? Of course not. But also, if you've never shot a basketball, you can't walk out there and effectively shoot a basketball either, but you can train hands that are not trained to shoot a basketball to pretty effectively shoot a basketball. So really, it's about skill acquisition. Treating trauma is about taking responsibility for skill acquisition, first in easier scenarios, working forward to more complex scenarios. Any skill you want to acquire can be acquired regardless of any emotions involved. And what the woo-woo psychology crowd would have you think, that, well, if with trauma you experience intense fear, that is information or data, meaning you can't do that. Well, wait a minute. You mean if I have intense fear about thoughts of playing the piano, I'll never learn to play the piano, or shoot a basketball, or swing a golf club, or swim? All things about which I have thoughts that manufacture fear mean I should not engage in that activity. See, it doesn't work. You don't have a different amygdala for sharks and for basketball playing and for speaking in public and trauma. You have the same amygdala regardless of the activity with which you are interacting, and it works the same way. Those who would try to complicate that for you want, well, something very simple, and usually it's your money. And lots of it for a long period of time. But healing does not lie in giving your money to people that would preach victimization and disability to you. Take your money elsewhere. Spend it more wisely. Find a clinician that challenges you, and you'll be amazed what your life can become. What are some other tips we might leave our folks with?
And just set your intention for it every day. So when you wake up in the morning, try to set the intention of, I'm going to focus on what I'm telling myself today. I'm not just going to let it pass me by and just react based off of those thoughts I'm letting, you know, simmer in my head. I'm going to stop them. I'm going to take them and look at them, analyze them, question them. And then if they're not benefiting me, I'm going to do something about it.
A journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. Take that one step and decide where it's going to lead.
And I think that's great advice. I would challenge you listeners and viewers, write that down. Share it with somebody. Remember an activity that you engaged in that you thought was going to be a really, really big deal, and then after you took that first step, it wound up not being that big a deal. Watch some inspiring movie. Pretend it's you. Listen to inspiring music, but at all costs, get moving and decide what that next step is going to be, and then take it. It'll be okay. And let us know how you did. You can find us also on Twitter, which is now X, I suppose, where we talk about such things. And we actually have a specific account for that, and that is at PTSD_psych. That's PSYCH, as in psychology. At PTSD_psych. And as always, you can find me, Doc Heath, at Therapy_Bites. That's on Twitter, X, at Therapy_Bites. We hope to see you there. Join the conversation. Bye-bye. Catch you next time.
Bye. T-Ballers, thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team.